Well, we knew at Love one time Hope our dream parents didn't want to do it. But the
There comes a time when we heed a certain call, when the world must come together as one. There are people dying. Oh, when it's time to lend a hand to life, the greatest gift of all. We can't go on pretending day by day that the moon somewhere will soon make a change. We all a part of God's great big family, and the truth, you know, love is all we need.
Divine word tonight, and the divine word is that God will heal you. I got Dr. Hillary here, and more about South Africa, and I want to talk to you what things will open up for you, where you might understand that God is still in the healing business. We're going into September, and a lot of children are already been infected with the virus. So if your kids going to school, make sure you protect it. You get them protected. We're praying for you and even you. And get ready for a breakthrough in your life. Psalms 51, Psalms 98, Psalms 50 for you to read. I've been working on our computer going in and out, and by the end of the month, we'll get a new computer. Don't forget to plant your seed for the month. Don't forget to stay focused. God is still in the business of healing and deliverance. And I just want you to know that. I was praying for some people earlier. They said we were going on in and out.
I don't know if you hear me or not,
but I want to share with you the power and the anointing of God. Now write this down. The divine talk of God. The divine talk tonight is the word of healing, deliverance, and success. Now, you might not understand. I was talking to a lady today, and she said that she's been getting information knowledge, didn't know what to do with it. So sometimes you have to let go and let God. And sometimes you have to let God carry you into the next level of teaching and deliverance. Get your pencil and paper, and I want you to write divine word of God, a divine talk with God. And as we talk about things that are happening, it's going to enlighten you to the word and the truth of God. And I think that's important when you can get the truth of God to come in your life and to talk to you. Don't forget, we're getting ready to go into September. Holiday coming up. I want you to stay focused. All is well. God, I'm praying for you, Pastor Edward, who lost her sister. There's no sorrow on earth that heaven could not heal. And I'm praying for you, Brother Jerry, praying for you tonight. Mama Joe, praying for you. Sister Mary Scott, praying for you. Mary Hawkins, praying for you. Sister Pearl, praying for you. Get ready and receive. Dr. Hill.
Thank you very much. I have to get used to this Pharaoh name. I've been called a lot of things. Most of them very interesting. But I assure you that it is always a very special pleasure and honor for me to have an opportunity to address this family. To be a part of an organization that enjoys the spiritual inspiration of Doc Ben, of Dr. John Henry Clark, of the different study groups that are foundation now for ASCAP. My colleagues on the board of directors, the members of this organization, friends of this organization, African people in general. There's nothing, absolutely nothing, that is more important to us than the community. That's really what I want to talk about this evening. I'm going to break my presentation into really two parts. Probably talk about several things, but there are really two things that I want to talk about. One is I want to talk about socialization. That's what's in the title. There is nothing, absolutely nothing, that you can do as a family without having control of the socialization process of your members. And when that breaks down, then you're vulnerable. You die. Literally, it's a matter of life and death. So I want to talk about that. And I want to talk about it in terms of what we did before white people started messing with us. To talk about indigenous African socialization. And the reason for that is that there are no people anywhere that their guide of how to raise babies and how to transform children into adults and adults into spiritual people ready to be ancestors. That's why that became a target of those who want to destroy us, who have wanted to destroy us, who still want to destroy us. That agenda has never changed. You may think slavery began with the Portuguese in Africa, and if you go over into East Africa even earlier, and maybe even some people say there was a little bit of slavery at all times. I'm not sure about that. Certainly not chattel slavery the way we understand it. But they said when the agenda changed, no, it didn't. You may say that colonization started when the Europeans got together in 1885, 1884 in Berlin. At the Berlin Conference, divided Africa among themselves without the inclusion of African people. And that ran out in history. That the agenda had changed when colonization ended because Africans took over governments as leaders of government, presidents, and so forth.
It didn't end there. Colonization didn't end there. Africa is still colonized at the moment. There's not a free African country in the world. There are a lot of us in political positions.
But
there's no African country where they own their monetary system and banking system. No African country where they even control their military.
So
fundamentally, the nation states there are already are still things that are currently interrupted by colonizers and slavers. So slavery continues, colonization continues, segregation continues.
Apartheid
fell, and it actually fell.
The agenda
changes clothes. It has different forms. And one of the most devastating forms is the persistence attempt to make sure that
they can control the socialization process of their children and of themselves. There's all kinds of ways talk about the indigenous process on the one hand and the culture war on the other, because it has so many interesting twists and turns, this culture war. And we're in the now. Even the military war can be reduced and transformed in some way. The culture war has actually accelerated and become even more prominent and even more devious, you know, the control of African people, the control of African people, and the prevention of African people from recovering the control of their mind. In 1663 and 1664, there is a manuscript in the National Library of Madrid. And that manuscript is a traveler who makes an observation about Africans in the Congo. And this is what he says. The indigenous people are all black in color, some more so, some less so. Many are seen who are the color of chestnut. Some tend to be more olive colored. But the one who claims to be the most beautiful. Some are born somewhat light-skinned, but as they grow older, they become darker and darker. This occurs because their mothers anoint their infants, exposing them once they have been anointed to the rays of the sun, then leaving them there for a long period and repeating this act over and over. Some children, although their parents are black, are born white skinned, and although they anoint them and use all manner of artifice, they can never be transformed into black skinned people. And these are regarded by the Congolese as monsters. Black Congolese, but their skin is white and they are short-sighted. Given the fact that a black skin is so highly regarded among them, we Europeans are really in the eye. As a result, children in these areas where a white has never been before would become terrified, fleeing in horror from us. No less than our children here in Europe are terrified by also fleeing from them. They do not want us to call them Negroes, but blacks, or in Portuguese, preto. Among them, only slaves are called Negroes, and thus among them, it is the same thing as Negroes say. Now, I want you to hang with me, because if you know me at all, you know I like metaphors. Because that's very African. Yeah. Africans are, I guess, for communication and communication. And metaphors are ways of looking indirectly par excellence. I want you to think about the dough. Everything important in Africa has layers. It's like peeling the onion. What you see at first is not all you will get. If you go back and look at this, you'll see some more. Oh, I didn't realize that. One way that people express this is in the four levels of understanding. Yuri So. Benny So, Bolo So, and So in the mystery system. That Geary So is, after all the training that you get, you are then prepared to take things at face value. But if you peel the onion, what is that something else? And that might take you to the point where habitually, if you're able to do it, then you graduated to Beniso, which is the word on the side. The first one is the word at face value. Beniso is the word on the side. The way it said. And a deeper level of knowledge is the back word, the word that comes at you from behind. That's the one that you suddenly are illuminated, but you never saw it coming. While you were working on it, it repeated itself. And you've been puzzling over something for a long time. You might actually see it in your dream. And if not in your dream, you might wake up and suddenly clarity is there, and you can't explain it. Now, look at his methodology. Look at George Washington Carver's methodology. If you get the book, The Secret Life of Plants, and see what George Washington Carver told me his methodology was. It doesn't sound like biological science. But he got answers. You know, answers that still have us eating tofu. A lot of other things that were done with peanut, and then ultimately with. And it came in a very African way. So if you read about his methodology, he will express methodologies that would be embarrassing to many people if they said in a PhD, SRE all over again. So I'm asking you to think on everything that I'm talking about, these layers of meaning, this peeling of the onion. And so even with the example I gave you about the but on the side, the Benny soul, they were really talking not only about their, but talking about their cultural color identity, but they were talking about their color identity. They were talking about the fact that they were not only proud of being black, but they were proud of being African. That's from the side. What would it feel like right now in Philadelphia to have a whole African population who looked at the way these people and said, no, no, the blacker, the more African you are, the more highly we regard you. See, how did we get from that point to be all the reporters told you. You went out and you got out there with those Nuba people. It's the Nuba people, the darker you were and peeled the onion, the more African you were, the more proud you were. Think about it. Unmistakably black compared to where we are now. John Clark. African culture America and the Caribbean began on the shores of West Africa when captured Africa, these Congo people, those Angola people, those people from Mozambique, those tried to take African soil in their hands and sometimes in their mouths on the beach of Africa. Slavery was war. A war against African culture. Especially against the structure of the people now don't we think it was people put on ships and brought here to work. Well, yeah, it was that. That's the first layer. But there's another layer. It was war on the structure that produced the who. So people who dominate and control must destroy structure and purpose. They must destroy identity. Many times I think we read, most of the people that we read, that we don't get all their messages because we're so happy when we get a piece of the message that we stop digging. But I could be on that one little paragraph and quite a while. Of the two pieces that I said I wanted to talk about. That's a part of the thing that we have. The dirt represents somebody. Can you imagine to put dirt in your mouth? Because of the aura of being called out of one's name. The terror of being detached from one's value system that filtered garbage out. The bond between brother and sister, mother and father, cousins, what they call the extended family. Think about that. These African people, let me just take, you know, whatever, in Philadelphia, Atlanta, New York, Los Angeles, Chicago. Maybe when I get there, I will have a little of Africa in my hand, which will mean it will be in my mind, which will be the connection that once they can do this. That's what I want to see. I want to see that order maintained. And if they catch me with it in my hand, follow this now, and they say, open your hand, boy! Trying to say, you are, open your hand, put it in the water, wash your hand. And they can see it coming, so they say, okay, not normal to put dirt in your mouth, but I will take Africa in my mouth. They won't even see that there. Can you see how strong God was? That's what he was doing. But not that. And for some, bond for others. But for this family, the bonds are still there. For the UNIA, the bonds are still there. But what was it that made those bonds? It bothers me that we don't have a place where we study that a lot. We study but we don't study who is who. You know, who is it that got conquered? Who were these people? Or who were the people that did the conquering? We didn't really study it very well. So disappointed if I'm looking at how many people there are in this room, if all the books are gone by the time this evening is over. This is not simple stuff that I want to take this opportunity, still working on this drift of the Congo man who got on the boat, who knew who he was, who was proud to be black in Africa. Then I want to come to Chicago during the ethnic parade that Anderson Thompson writes about. Some days, I think Anderson Thompson is the crown. He doesn't write as much as everybody, doesn't talk as much as everybody. He just thinks better than everybody. And I'm going to share with you two paragraphs of Anderson Thompson from the Africa of the which turns the right side up. Because he looks at it looks like this. During the war, in the wake of World War II, building, drumming, bugle blowing representatives of groups marched down State Street. That's Chicago, eh? A well-known thoroughfare in downtown Chicago in celebration of with banners waving and a steady stream of Greeks, Lithuanians, Ukrainians, Poles, Hungarians, Chinese, and so on, they strutted and announcing Captive Nations Week. These neatly painted signs and banners signal to the world in dramatic form that their fathers, mothers, brothers, and sisters were still in captivity had not been forgotten by their people here in the United States. The colorful standards identified each nation in captivity and the government that held their kinfolk captive. These marks signaled a warning to the Soviet Chinese was a strong resistance movement in America ready to aid in the liberation of their respective nations. Typically, hundreds of black shoppers, officers, and only genuine captives in America stood watching the captive nation parade. The wealthiest, the most talented, the most technically lifted their hats, saluted, cheered the determined Greek nationalists, the angry Czech patriots, the proud Hungarian freedom fighters, the outspoken Chinese nationalists, slaves, munched popcorn, laughed, jived, and cracked jokes while enjoying the pomp and pageantry of the Euro Asians, and they're the ones who should have had a in America stagnated into a captive nation of watchers and observers, oblivious to the character, nature, and deeds of their own families, who have the goal of first-class citizenship as the only solution for more than 30 million black captives. That's their only goal. Where did the vision go? Where did the consciousness go? What happened to it that caused us to be fragmented and distorted? Yes, that damaged our character. It is character. That we're talking about, isn't it? In character, the rock solid essence of who you are, and if character is suddenly fluid, amorphous, evaporated, they used to call it the four moments of the sun. Metaphor. One who brings into being, one with an eye for the creativity, or ray, Atum, the complete one. That's the three moments of the sun. You know there's another one. Osir, Osiris, the one who is on his way into becoming Kepra again. I can have a very better to five nations right now. Where are we in the four moments of the sun? Bringing into being at the highest point of our creativity, at the complete and satisfying stage of spirit among us. Preparing to rise again. Fukia. Akia. Kim Wandindi, who was here in America, and in America was here for many years not knowing that there was an African population in America. Didn't know African existed. He's one of the men who works up in Boston, in a library. But he's also a counselor, the only one that they would trust to work with as many as 50 of the men in prison. They'll let him work with them by himself. Nobody else. Most people, for security reasons, man who never raises his voice have that he can handle 50 hardened criminals all at once. And when he finishes, they have no recidivism rate because when they leave the prison, they don't come back. What does I know that have nothing but recidivism. They've never had a success in their career. They still get paid. He tells you, there's a little book out called Self-Healing. What if we had a book called Education? Old Lessons from Africa. Well, you can be prevented from asking those kind of questions if people can convince you to be preoccupied with your pigment. Think about it for a minute. Göttingen University invents the concept of race. And then others began to imitate that concept, and Europe said, and Hitler said, oh, I know race. That's what Hitler said. He knew it was a false category. You say, Ace, you don't mean that color is a false category. Oh, no. No, color is there. Pigment is there. Race isn't there. But why would they want us to be preoccupied with pigment? So that we identify ourselves. Let me give you a little story. We had two think tanks. Want to oppress you to death, that ask them to get together by themselves without you to talk about taking over the socialization process. I'm talking about not just schooling, but socialization. That's what socialization was about. And only Africans can produce African character. They get worried about that. So a man called a conference in Chicago called the racial identity, black racial identity. But the person who called it was a European through the Urban League. Okay, so now he gets all the Africans in the room to talk about black racial
segregating into you.
Because they weren't talking about family. They were talking about some abstract notion. So frighten them by keeping their mouth looking for folks. And ultimately, so dying, the clear word. That's where I want us to go. How do you get the clear word? Last thing I want to say about this race thing for a moment is that we don't know how to look at the world. See, we don't know what the rest of the world is doing. D2 is the intelligence section. Their job is going to find out about everything happening in the world, write books about it for their private use so they'll know how to hurt people. Or as they say in the army, kill people. That's why they kill people. And so they do D2. We don't do D2. So we really don't know how the world functions. Watch this. I wrote about this in my book, Fable. And a lot of the ASCAC people have been reading these things for last year. Read that book? Said, yeah, a lot of ASCAC people read Tribe. How about The Clash of Civilization? Quite a few people at ASCAC read. Both of the books say the same thing. That race don't matter. Money don't matter. Okay? That the world is run by people who share civilization at 4 or 5 groups. Depending on who you read, they tell you which groups they are. Usually, European, German-based, Christian, Protestant, usually Muslims. There's billions of them in the world, and they have a crescent and a star on the front of the book. And usually the yin and the yang, which can symbolize all the Asian people, they basically they're roughly these three primary ethics running the world. So they but one group not mentioned as being a group running the world are Africans. And both of the books but you don't understand how the game is being played. And since you don't understand, you think they're playing a game of race and they're playing a game of civilization. So who after 9/11 they called to come into the meeting of the Secretary of Defense, the Secretary of State, who did they call? They went straight over to Harvard and they got a little professor named Huntington, who wrote a book called Clash of Civilizations. But now we're terrified, and you more than anybody seem to understand where the world is going, and what is it that we can do? So here he is holding seminars in the White House, explaining what he had already written 10 years ago that ASCAC had been reading. We've been reading too. He looked at the civilizations in the world, decided which one he belonged to. Were you surprised at which one he chose? Would he have chosen Muslim? Would he have chosen Asian? Isn't it interesting that this war is being called a war of civilization? Between the civilized and uncivilized world, which side do you think you're on? I can't say it the way my buddy used to say. We're down to the technical cutting stage now. You have to be a farm boy to appreciate that, because they do those kind of things to pig the cows and all that, make Rocky Mountain.
I wish I was an economist.
and a business person. Those are talents that we're going to have to put this thing back together. I wish I was a general, but we're going to have somebody fight.
You know,
it can't be like they got a nonviolent corner. And except you think we ought to go over there and kick the hell out of the Taliban.
Well, yeah. I'm like
Bishop Harry McNeil Turner. Nobody told me this. Bishop, you know, he didn't say it, but he knew. Bishop Harry McNeil Turner was just like Ida B. Wells. He carried a pistol. Sometimes in the pulpit.
But
then
you got to be those old leaders.
Who hadn't forgotten Africa? Maybe he had a back to Africa. He still had dirt in his hand and in his mouth. So he still had a pistol.
Well, you tell us the government, that's part of what we got to do. We got to have a way to defend and protect ourselves. The peace I'm talking about though, right now is the peace that ASCAC is in the middle of. They can't do all those other things at the same time. Well, somebody got to do this job well, and we're the only people in the African community doing this job. What we're doing right now. The only people.
Which also is the only people under attack in America. The only one.
Yeah.
fit in.
But listen to this.
I mean, he can't even ask questions. Did you know that Isaiah Thomas never asked questions? Have you ever heard that we pray for justice?
The most
qualified man in the world, they told us at the time. And he cannot ask questions because he's scared. Because he used to be in his bondage and he changed. And because eventually somebody on the court will ask the question, he was interested in anyway, I'll just wait till they ask the question. And then I'll make my decision. I'm not making that up.
I'm not making that up.
But on the other hand, let's go back to Africa. Let's go back to the Congo. People that don't have PhDs from here. To be initiated is to be ready to accept responsibility.
Both
as a mature human being and as a powerful spiritual being. It is to study fundamental principles that transfer life out.
Where is that conversation being held? Who are the
accreditation? Who can accredit at ASCAC University? Who is someone that talks like that? Someone that talks like the other? See, we have. It's hard for me to overestimate what they did. I talked about it before. For example, myself and her in the 50s went out to study mountain nutrition in Uganda. Y'all know Uganda. Right, it is major, so Uganda. Mothers raising babies, you don't know Uganda. But why would you know Uganda? Because they went there and spent years studying whether the babies were malnourished, and in the process of giving tests to see whether their nourishment was being provided, the scores on the developmental test were the highest scores they'd ever seen in the world. Months in advance of the European counterpart, babies that could be pulled into the sitting position and look their parents directly in the eye in 2 weeks old. Climbing stairs before anybody, knowing their language before anybody, knowing their name before anybody. They say, yeah, drop the study. We have never seen anything like it. They didn't ask the question, is it genetic? It must be environmental. Then they say, what in the environment is this that makes these babies outperform? They do, by the way. If they do it the African way, if mothers raise babies the African way, they still are the highest achievers. And the babies that are in the housing projects, the poverty sections of the city, are the ones that kept the most of the African culture, because the middle class folks got out, got changed of it, and started having babies like Europeans. Remember, their babies are dumb as the Europeans.
Research on bonding and attachment. Happy African behavioral.